Yeah, now this is what I remember while growing up in the 80s, when everything was simple, our hair was bad, and the coolest thing around was Nintendo. Games like Ninja Gaiden or Castlevania got us so pumped up we'd actually hold tape recorders up to our TVs and stand around on each level just to get a pure recording of the music. And why? Just so we could jam out on our Walkmans on the way to school. No shame, no sense of irony, just pure unadulterated awesome. This is VG Panda Radio. Hi, I'm Panda, your host, and you're listening to the first ever VG Panda Radio show. For this first episode, it's all about video game music. It's way too huge a topic to cover in just one show, so instead I've decided to focus on one of my favorite PC game series. But before I get started, a little preamble. Music with this much complexity and range, like the song here from Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 for the NES, were leaps and bounds more complex than anything else you could get for your home in the 80s. The only other game console most people had up to that point was the Atari, and that system definitely isn't remembered for its aural prowess. I remember getting my NES and being blown away by how the video gaming experience finally seemed complete, all because of the original Super Mario Bros. Why is this game so special to so many? Well, it's the first game most of us own because it came with the system, and it just so happened to be way beyond our expectations. For example, instead of how most Atari games were structured, where the goal is just to get a high score, here we had a game you could beat. There was still a score, and you still had lives, you know, harkening back to its arcade roots, but it had a definite ending. And hey, wow, that little guy running around actually looks like a person, sort of. And he kind of moves like one, too. This is going to kick ass. And it just wouldn't have been the same without that iconic Mario music. This style of music has become known as chiptunes because it's all generated by an incredibly simple computer chip. This is all the game developers had to work with at the time, a cheap piece of hardware that produced the bare-bones fundamentals of sound. And despite its overwhelming limitations, ingenuity and talent could produce some amazing sounds, giving rise to some of the most memorable melodies and legendary composers in gaming history. In fact, the basic design behind chiptunes hardware was so efficient that, until purely digital recording became completely feasible many years later, nearly every console made during the rest of the century, and a while thereafter even, had a sound chip in it based off of the same design. PC games, however, have a bit of a different story. Thank you. is a MIDI song. MIDI files are kind of like chiptunes, except that instead of generating and modulating tones, they work by playing back samples of instruments at different speeds and pitches in order to create the song. Because of the PC's nature of upgradable dynamic hardware, MIDI music had the capability to sound fantastic with the right setup. Only problem was that fancy rig cost a ton of money, and virtually none of the people playing PC games had a professional audio setup. Most of us didn't even know MIDI files could sound any better than they did, and in the early 90s it was too early for easily changeable MIDI sound banks to become mainstream. When they did, they had the capability to change something that sounds like this. To something that sounds like this. I'll just give you a minute to go find your shoes that just blew off. Yes, believe it or not, that second song started its life as a MIDI file. What you heard is the result of many hours' work by a team of audio engineers and about $20,000 worth of high-quality sampled instruments. That's never going to be a viable option. So, obviously, we had a problem if you wanted games to sound as good as they look without needing to spend 20 grand on hardware and a team of audio technicians. Thankfully, a more practical solution existed. Mods. Okay, now, whoa, that sounds way better than the MIDI music we're used to. Mods worked like MIDI files in that they contained the raw note sequences to generate the music, but the mods also contained the instruments. That means that if your system can play the file, it sounds exactly as it's supposed to. It does require more processing power than MIDI files, but the benefits are clear. The only question is, who's gonna use it? And now we arrive at last, to the series whose music I've admired from day one. Unreal. The Unreal series spans two story-based main entries, an expansion or two, and of course the spin-off tournament series. Each one had a different musical focus from one or more composers, and each one brought us something unique to the soundscape of the games. Set in a science fiction setting, the Unreal games have an incredibly diverse visual style that all but required some amazing sound design to pull off. And the standard was set in 1998 by Alexander Brandon, Andrew G. Sega, and Michel van den Bos. The original Unreal was a landmark title in many ways. It had 24-bit color graphics, supported Intel's brand new MMX CPU instructions, and featured 3D acceleration using Microsoft's Direct3D technology, which was still an emerging standard at the time. PC games had come a long way by that point, and Unreal certainly could have used entirely digitized music if they wanted to, but it would have taken up too much space on the disk and too many resources from your machine to be practical for the developers. Epic Games, therefore, opted to go with mod music and hired some of the most experienced mod makers in the world to compose it. The result is some incredibly versatile music for a rich game world that has only gotten more visually diverse and spectacular as time goes on. I'm going to take you through some of the musical highlights of each game and try to provide some insight into the different styles and motifs as they've evolved over time. It has always been one of my favorite things to experience the growth of an art form, and as you'll see, this series is a great place to start. Let's jump in! In Unreal, you play as a criminal being transported across space when the prison ship suddenly comes under attack and crashes on an uncharted planet. The first level of the game, getting out of the downed prison ship, has no music at all and acts as a prelude, visually and stylistically, for the rest of the game. This song is the first one you hear after escaping the crash as you see the planet you now occupy. Lush and resplendent with life, its first impression is a doozy. Soon, you find yourself assisting the strange four-armed natives who are being attacked and enslaved by an alien race called the Scar. Your mission? Escape the planet alive. The game takes you across the entire planet of Na'Pali, where you go about helping the Nali, those four-armed natives I mentioned earlier, and taking out the Scar along the way. The game's art style is highly fantastical, with bright colors and huge open environments. Its contemporary competitor, Quake 2, had similar technological bullet points, but none of the variety, so Unreal was soon hailed as the best-looking game ever made. Put another way, it was the crisis of its day. Every part of the presentation was top-notch, and they couldn't have done it without the mod music. Allow me to explain. Mod music had the distinct advantage over MIDI music in terms of quality, sure, but it also had advantages over Redbook audio, which is just the fancy name for CD audio, in more than just space. Mod music has the limited capability to be programmed so that it can actually have alternate streams of notes embedded into it. This means that a second stream of music could be called upon whenever necessary and mixed in on the fly without loading any more data. The developers of Unreal used this to great effect to change the intensity of the music based on what was happening in the game. Considering how much of the music is ambient, and whose melody is usually somewhat understated, it allowed the composers to really run with the idea of creating two versions of each piece of music. Let me give you an example. Take this piece, which is heard on a level which begins as a somber boat ride through a dim, foggy tunnel lit only by small crystals jutting out from the walls. As the boat travels down the river, you eventually get attacked by a mob of flying creatures lobbing fireballs and skittering about as you desperately try to duck and dodge around in the tiny vessel. Now, whenever this encounter happens, no matter how long it took you to get to the fight, the music is ready to kick in whenever it needs to. Let's hear how it happens. This was a pretty incredible and immersive thing that Epic did, and it's only possible using mod files. The later games in the series experimented with different ways to ramp up the music's intensity using purely digital music, but stitching two WAV files together and having it sound good is much harder to do. By now you're probably getting a sense of how the music in Unreal sounds, ambient and smooth, or lively and exciting, with the overall soundscape leaning towards tribal and electronica influences. And, for the most part, you're right. That is, until we start talking about Unreal's expansion, Return to Na'Pali. This song here is the unused main title theme composed for Return to Napoli. I don't know why it's not used in the game anywhere, and I only stumbled upon it myself by browsing through the game's audio files. As it turns out, there's a small bounty of interesting unused content in there. For example, there's a level set in a spaceship that looks like it would have been a mission hub for the game, but it probably belonged to an abandoned gameplay concept and was never used. As for the music, there's quite a few tracks like this one hidden in there that sound pretty incredible. Hearing it now, I realize how appropriate it really is for setting the mood of the expansion. The game itself has a more coherent story than the original, with cutscenes, intermissions between each level where your character actually speaks about her situation, and new music that has a stronger melodic focus than the original's. All the same composers worked on this project too, so it managed to sound cohesive while still doing something new. To illustrate this, I wanted to point out two particular tracks that really stood out to me as I played through the game. The first piece is heard while crossing a natural formation across a gigantic canyon called the Nagomi Passage. It's actually the second time you've been there. The first time is early in the game, at night, and you're woefully under-equipped to take out the scar, so you're trying to avoid detection at all costs. This time, however, it's the middle of the day. No more hiding. The way is clear. It's time for payback. You look out from the cave, see the sun for the first time, and emerge. It was like a breath of fresh air. Exactly what they were going for, I imagine. I remember playing this and having to stop and just listen, grinning like an idiot. This was awesome. So, before I get started on the second one, I wanted to mention something about myself first. I've always been a huge fan of electronic music because it has the capability to create all new sounds that no real instrument could ever make. To that end, every time I hear this next song, I get goosebumps. In particular, pay attention to how a strange resonating noise is introduced right at the beginning, then comes in again full force at the climax of the song. Oh, and one more thing. I tried over and over to come up with some way to edit this piece down to its core components to give you just the essentials, but it's impossible. Every moment of it is brilliant, so what follows is the entire piece, beginning to end. I apologize for gushing, but I just love that song. So, Unreal, an absolutely unique game that rightly deserves its place in history as a landmark title. Where would it go from here? Unreal Tournament is the next game to bear the Unreal moniker, and its announcement came as quite a surprise to many. It was a multiplayer-only game with a ton of different modes, and yet still showed that same diverse aesthetic that made the original so striking. The question was, why a multiplayer-only game? The original certainly wasn't remembered for its multiplayer, and I think most of us expected another single-player game. Well, in the years during and since Unreal was released, online first-person shooters really started to take off. The internet was finally becoming mainstream, getting faster, and I'm sure the folks at Epic took notice of id's Quake game's multiplayer and how it gave them incredible staying power. I imagine Epic was eager to get in on some of that. And as it ended up, both Epic and id were set to release a multiplayer-only sequel to a game with a heavy single-player focus at almost exactly the same time. Immediately after both were released, controversy exploded over which was the better game. Unreal Tournament was a huge success right off the bat. And not for no reason. It was colorful, fast-paced, and easily trounced the competition in terms of variety. Where Quake 3 Arena had perfected the core feel of a first-person shooter, Unreal Tournament went crazy with game modes and level design. Nearly every level of Quake 3 Arena was a mix of red, yellow, and gray, and it had only deathmatch, team deathmatch, and capture the flag gameplay modes. Unreal Tournament, on the other hand, had all that and some new ideas thrown into the mix, like the mission-based assault mode or the control point-focused game called Domination. It didn't feel as tight or as gritty as Quake, but it had so much to offer that for many, it was the clear winner. But what about the music? Well, once again, the original composers from Unreal returned, and this time with a fresh shot of energy. This was a multiplayer game, after all. It had to sound driving and energetic. And that's exactly what we got. The unique sounds of the Unreal Universe done in a much faster-paced style. The only downside is that the music couldn't be as melodically driven as before, lest it wear on the senses, so some of it isn't as much fun to listen to on its own. Unreal Tournament's music uses many of the same samples and themes from the previous game, but keeps things going at a steady pace throughout. One other thing I neglected to mention earlier about mod music is that it can have a defined beginning section to the song, build up to a sustainable rhythm, and then loop it there without having to repeat the opening section again. This gave the matches more structure, warming up to full intensity and then keeping it there until the round was over. Overall, the music in Unreal Tournament took the style established in Unreal and turned the intensity dial up to 11. It also helped to meld the riffs of an electronic guitar with the otherworldly ethereal instruments that had previously been the focus. So now, before we leave Unreal Tournament behind, I'm going to play the song that you hear after completing the single-player bot match challenges, as you're being awarded your final trophy in the Hall of Champions. This song is many players' favorite, and they would never forgive me if I left it out. Especially my brother. This one's for you, Dee. Unreal Tournament's legacy lives on to this day, even to the point of almost completely eclipsing its predecessor. Nowadays, it seems that many have never played the original Unreal, and that's truly a shame. I can hardly blame them, though. The monumental success of the tournament games brought in many new players who would otherwise have never played an Unreal game. Even Epic has downplayed the original to the point where they have never made a regular Unreal game since. It wouldn't be until 2003 that we would see the first and only real sequel to Unreal, and even then it was sandwiched by the release of two Unreal Tournament titles, Unreal Tournament 2003 in 2002, and Unreal Tournament 2004 in, well, 2004. After that, Epic began work on its first title in years with a single-player focus, Gears of War. Another major success for the team, they would not return to the Unreal series until the holiday season of 2007 with Unreal Tournament 3, the current latest game in the series. This is the end of part 1 of the show. Who knew it would take this long to get through it all? Whew. So, remember to check out part 2 for a look at the rest of the series, and thanks so much for listening. This is Panda, and I'm out.